Welcome back. I'm Michelangelo Signorelli on OWQ Sirius 109 XM 98. There has been a lot of talk once again about sex addiction ever since Tiger Woods and his very prolific affairs have been very much in the news, and a lot of discussion as well about Dr. Drew and his sex rehab reality show. And it had us talking quite a bit again on the program and debating, and a lot of people saying, you know, I don't like this term. This is wrong. This is not a way that you talk about sex. And other people saying, no, this is something that we need to talk about, need to label as sex addiction. So I thought we would get two people who are people who've thought a lot about this and who certainly have very passionate and very informed and very smart positions on it to discuss it with us. Dan Savage has been on this show before many times. He is a sex advice columnist. You all know him. He writes a syndicated column and appears in papers all around the country. And he is the editorial director at The Stranger, the weekly in Seattle, writes a lot of magazine articles. He appears on TV a lot as well. Benoit Denizet-Lewis is a contributing writer to the New York Times, writes a lot of columns, a lot of articles, for the New York Times Magazine. He is somebody who has written about this issue from a personal perspective in his book, American Anonymous, talking about the issue of addiction across the country, and in particular, his own struggle with his own sexual issues, and which he calls sexual addiction. Benoit Denizet-Lewis has a new book out called American Voyeur, Dispatches from the Far Reaches of Modern Life. It is a great collection of a lot of his work, looking at a lot of the issues that don't get discussed a lot, including some of the issues we're going to talk about as well. So both of them are joining me to talk about. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me back. And how are you?
I'm doing okay. And Benoit, welcome to the show again.
Thanks.
Great to have both
of you. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Benoit. How are you?
Good.
So let me start with first asking about a definition for this term. And let's start with you, Benoit, since it is something you've written about very recently, in fact, regarding Tiger Woods. How would you define the term sex addiction?
That's a great question. the term that I use, the definition that I like, and it works for drugs and alcohol, also behavioral addictions like gambling addiction, sex addiction, compulsive overeating, which some people call food addiction. The definition that I like and I use in my book, American Anonymous, is this, and that's the use of a substance or activity for the purpose of lessening pain or augmenting pleasure by a person who has lost control over the rate, frequency, or duration of its use and whose life has become progressively unmanageable as a result. That is a pretty good definition in my mind, and it fits with both sex addiction and it would fit with gambling. One of the really interesting things is, you know, Dan was mentioning in what context, there needs to be a chemical substance for you know, something to be considered an addiction. And that's outdated thinking. I mean, we sort of move beyond that. If you look at gambling addiction, there is no substance. But we generally do agree, there's sort of a consensus now, that gambling, which is a behavior, can for some people be an addiction, not for everybody. The same thing goes for sex. Sex is a wonderful thing. The problem is that sex for me and for many other people sort of ceased to be that. It ceased to be fun. Personally, it had sort of taken over my life to a point where my life had become very small and very sad. Sort of typical examples that, you know, I'm going to go online in a chat room for 30 minutes and talk to some guys. You know, 7 hours later, I'm still there. I'm going to drive 300 miles to go meet someone for sex. Stuff that I actually didn't want to be doing, and so it became And whether you want to call it sexual addiction, sexual compulsion, I actually don't care which one it is, but to discount that that a certain number of people, and including some gay people, have lost control over sort of lost the ability to make healthy decisions for them. And it's not decisions like, you know, I have so much shame over my sexuality and, you know, so I'm going to call myself a sex addict. It's not about that. I love sex. Sex is a wonderful thing. Just for me, it had ceased, it had taken over my life much in the same way that drugs and alcohol take over the lives of drug addicts and alcoholics. Mm.
Okay. So, I mean, you've now really kind of, I think, covered a lot of bases in this that I think a lot of us have talked about. And I want to just make it clear that I tend to agree with a lot of what Dan thinks about in terms of this issue and the word sex addiction. I want to talk more about that and that term being used and how it plays into morality and issues that certainly the LGBT movement fights against. But I just want to, in full disclosure, make sure everybody knows my position. Nonetheless, I want to be very fair about this issue and make sure everybody gets their point of view. Dan, what do you say to that that description of sex addiction, where he really kind of broadened it out as an issue that is very similar to drugs and alcohol, and that even gambling and other issues we now call addictions?
Well, you know, anything and everything based on Benoit's definition of, you know, blank addiction is potentially an addictive substance or activity. It sort of broadens the definition of, you know, the model of addiction to the point of absurdity, really. Addiction is a physiological dependence. You may be behaving compulsively, you may be behaving self-destructively, but you're not chemically, physiologically dependent on X, whatever X might be, if there is no sort of chemical function. And I'm skeptical of this. You know, we live in a very sex-negative culture. Dr. Drew, in particular, is a very sex-negative cultural force. And I'm dubious about this attempt to lump something like sex, which can be good or bad, destructive or non-destructive, in with these things that are sort of generally regarded as always destructive, like heroin and cocaine. And we're taking this, you know, chemical substance abuse model and applying it to sex.
Are they always destructive? People recreationally use drugs.
Well, just in cultural discourse, they're always presented as destructive. Mm-hmm. I'm always very clear to make the distinction that there is, you know, drug use and drug abuse, and they are two different things, and not all users are abusers. But in the, you know, the broader cultural conversation, particularly on television, there's no such thing as a recreational or successful drug user or someone who uses in moderation and isn't harming himself. If you're using drugs, you bad. And the dialectic around sex now with the whole sex addiction thing on TV is if you're using this sex thing, it's as bad as those drug things that you're not supposed to use or touch or get near.
So, I mean, I guess, Benoit, how do you respond to the people who say that it becomes about definition of what you call addiction, and that all too often then is left up to these people who are deciding that something is addictive when a whole bunch of other people would say that is not addictive? Let me just give you an example. What about a guy who, let's say Tiger Woods was not actually having sex with these women, you know, just fantasizing online with women, or was really just looking at porn all the time, all day, but wasn't actually going out and having sex, and that was something that, you know, just bugged his wife. Would he be considered a sex addict? Even though, I mean, because I feel like it becomes a way that you label adultery, and that becomes moralistic.
Yeah, there are people who have sex with people who aren't their wife or husband who are not sex addicts, and then there are those who are. You talk about this trouble with definition, and I absolutely agree. I mean, that's really the complicated part of this.
And the addict model definition implies powerlessness. You know, this whole powerlessness.
Yeah, powerlessness, absolutely.
And I don't think that's true. I think people have the power to make choices, particularly when they're engaging in behaviors that do not have a chemically addictive aspect.
Well, then you haven't seen me in a chat room, and you haven't seen me in a sex club.
Well, I don't doubt that there are people who, you know, compulsively engage in self-destructive behaviors and need to get a grip. I just don't think that borrowing the 12-step addiction model from booze and drugs is a way to empower people to take control of their lives. I think it's disempowering.
Let's look at the history a little bit of addiction. I mean, Michael, you brought up this point around, you know, how do we define this? And this is a really interesting question. I mean, we have changed our definitions of addictions over the last 200 years in this country so many times. We've been trying to get a handle. This is not the first time we're trying to get a handle on this. 40 years ago, we were debating, God, you know, is alcohol, you know, there's these people who drink too much. Maybe they're depressed. Should we really be calling them addicts? I mean, doesn't that sort of take away their responsibility? Should we really be doing this? I mean, we've been debating this. This is not new. So sex addiction is where alcoholism was 40, 50 years ago.
But there is a physical addiction to a substance there that is actually, after a certain point, you are craving, your body is craving something.
Absolutely.
There is a withdrawal.
So where does gambling
I can throw out a quote here, addiction is a physiological dependence. When alcoholics stop drinking, they get the sweats, their heart rates go up, their reflexes increase, they can even develop DTs. Heroin addicts have their own withdrawal syndrome, but again, it involves physiological changes. If sex addicts are denied sex, they may have all sorts of psychological problems, but they not go into physiological withdrawal. Charles Moser.
That's actually, well, there's a lot of debate on that. I can read you, and I can tell you from my own experience, if you want, I can tell you what withdrawal feels like for me and other people. But let's not get, I mean, we're stuck on this drugs and alcohol. Where does gambling fit in? Is gambling not an addiction?
Well, what do you say to that, to Dan? What about Dan? What about gambling? What about other issues that people now go to an AA kind of model, a 12-step program, to deal with?
I'm not sure where I come down on the whole gambling as addiction thing. I do think, though, you know, that had sort of taken root before the sex addiction model had its breakout, and gambling is kind of culturally regarded as a negative and a bad thing. I don't believe that gambling is physically addictive. I don't think poor impulse control is addiction, or all self-destructive behavior should be rounded up to the addict model when we talk about trying to get a grip on our lives and take control of them. I think it disempowers people. I think it encourages helplessness in the face of whatever. And most people I know who bandy around the term, you know, sex addict, are people who are making excuses for the behaviors in their lives that they're not changing. I can't change my behavior. I'm a sex addict. Here I am, Mr. Powerless, and I just don't buy it.
I mean, Dan, I really have to. I have to seriously disagree with you on that. I mean, this idea that, and I got the same thing when I wrote, you know, a book where I talked about my addiction. I wrote a New York Times piece. I got emailing people saying, you know, you're just making an excuse for your behavior, and I'm like, yeah, because writing a piece in the New York Times, coming out as a sex addict, and all the embarrassment that comes with that is the first excuse that I would think of in that situation. No, I mean, as sex addicts, many of us spend years sort of like denying that we have a problem, and it's sort of the idea that we rush out to absolve ourselves of our behavior by calling ourselves a sex addict is myth. It's not true. Yes, there are certain celebrities who go to rehab, although they tend not to say they're a sex addict. They tend to say they're going in for drugs and alcohol, which is actually not true in a lot of cases. But, you know, there are celebrities who use this as an excuse. Yes, I give you that. The majority of people who I know, myself, this is not an excuse. This is years of sort of this baffling lack of control over this particular part of our lives. How did this happen to me? It's a great question. I don't understand alcoholics and drug addicts. I don't relate to that. I can have a glass of wine. My brain doesn't want more. But, you know, put me in a sexual situation, I literally have lost the control, and I need to sort of do more and more and more to even get satiated, to get that sense that I, you know, back when I was 20 and having sex, I need to sort of push the envelope. And that's actually actually sort of typical of addiction. You need to do more and more to sort of feel the same thing that you did earlier.
Mm. My guests are Benoit Denise Lewis, who you just heard speaking, and Dan Savage. Dan Savage, of course, sex advice columnist and also the editorial director at The Stranger in Seattle. Benoit, author of most recently American Voyeur, Dispatches from the Far Reaches of Modern Life, and America Anonymous, all about his dealing with an issue that we're talking about right now, sex addiction, and whether or not it really is something that exists or should be labeled. I'm Michelangelo Cigarelli on Al Q, Sirius 109 XM 98. Dan, you just heard Benoit talk about something he really struggled with, something that is very powerful, something that he's really trying to come to grips with. Would you rather this be called, or do you think it should be called, compulsion and obsession? And why? And why is the word addiction a problem?
The word for me, addiction, is a problem because, again, it lumps sex in with heroin and cocaine and crack and even gambling and other things that we regard as complete social negatives and also completely unnecessary. Nobody needs to use crack, right? Most of us are wired to and want to have sex, and that's natural and that's good at that initial impulse. You know, it feels like a bit when we argue past each other. We're bogging down on a semantic debate. If the addiction model helped Benoit get a grip, I don't want to, like, take that away from him. I do want to warn that we, you know, particularly gay people, to our peril, promote models around sex that lumps, again, natural, perhaps non-monogamous, perhaps non-reproductive desires and acts, recreational sex, all our sex is recreational, in with bad things like, you know, drug abuse, if not drug use. And I sent out an email to the folks on the SexNet list today who are all profs and researchers and clinical psychologists all over the country. And what I got back from most everyone is that there's no empirical basis for this, for the model, for the sex addiction model, which perhaps doesn't mean that there won't ever be one ever. But as of now, you know, the best minds in the country say that there isn't a model for this, that there is no proof, there is no evidence that sex is potentially an addictive activity.
Benoit, I'll give you a chance to respond, but I just wanted to ask.
No, he's right on that. try to get money, try to get federal money to study sex addiction, and you get laughed at, unfortunately.
Right.
So we're probably not going to have the empirical evidence for quite some time.
But Dan, I want to ask you in that regard, though. When we look at drinking, when we look at people with drinking problems, when we look at drugs, not everybody who goes to AA, not everybody who feels that they have a problem with drinking necessarily has a physical addiction. And when you talk to people who have drinking problems and, you know, you talk to them and you say, you know, how do you know you have a problem? I drink wine every night and I don't have, you know, and they'll say, well, you know, it's really consumed my life. They don't tell you about a physical addiction. They talk about something that has really consumed them, and they may drink as much as you do socially, but for them it's a problem, and yet they mm-hmm. still call it an addiction. How is this not the same?
Because with a chemical substance like alcohol or drugs, it's not enough to say, hey, this is a problem, I'm going to knock it off, because you are going to go through withdrawal. You are going to have symptoms that make walking away from the addictive substance much more complicated than just turning off the computer and shoving back.
One of the interesting things, I mean, just on the subject of withdrawal, many sex addicts do go through withdrawal. If I've been sort of in my addiction a lot and then stop, I actually do go through a physical withdrawal. It's very hard for people sort of to get
what
that.
Is that? What is that? What is that?
Well, it varies. For me, it's sleeplessness. It's sort of feeling incredibly uncomfortable in my body. All kinds of sort of, there's this withdrawal period. All kinds of sort of past sexual experiences sort of come flooding into my brain. These are things that don't happen otherwise. So,
but how is that a chemical reaction to not having sex?
That's a great question.
It sounds like a cascade of you know, emotional consequences and self-loathing, and not necessarily the physiological dependence.
There certainly are emotional consequences. And I mean, Dan, I get and I agree with you that that we have too much sort of shame. This country is way too sex negative, especially for gay men. We've got so much shame around our sexuality. So I get your reticence to not label sex as addictive. I totally understand that. And I think two things can be true here. I mean, I really do. I think that, the reality is that we're really messed up culturally around sex. We have way too much shame around it. There are people, Christian conservatives who sort of tout the sex addiction model because they're really trying to control people's sexual behavior. That is true. That exists. But there is also this reality that some of us deal with, whether you want to call it sexual addiction, sexual compulsion. It's especially interesting when I talk to gay men about it. I got so many emails after I wrote my piece in the New York Times about it, just a lot of touching emails. And it's interesting. I'll tell gay men, that I'm a sex addict, and I get two responses. And one is, oh, honey, we're all sex addicts. and then the other response I get is, well, you're just being sex negative, and you're just shaming yourself, and you need to go out to the sex clubs and just, don't worry.
Wouldn't give you that reaction.
Well, I know. Those are two common reactions, and they're both interesting in their own way. Oh, honey, we're all sex addicts. Well, no, all gay men are not sex. Most gay men are not sex addicts. And it's also complicated about this. I mean, I'm not denying that sex addiction is a complicated question. As someone who's living in New York or San Francisco, who's just moved from Idaho, and they're in New York, and they're having lots of sex, and they're going a little crazy in their early mid-20s around sex, many people go through that phase. That's not sex addiction. When it becomes sex addiction is when you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and you're continuing to do behavior that is like...
But why? Benoit? Why can't somebody in their 30s, 40s, 50s have a lot of sex?
You're doing the behavior that you were doing in your 20s, and it is cascading. Suddenly you're spending more time than you want to be. You have plans with your friends to go out Thursday night, but suddenly you find yourself canceling on your friends quite often because you can't tear yourself away from the computer. You start getting to work late. You start blowing off work. These are examples of ways, and it varies.
Self-destructive behaviors when people are out of control. And
yeah, and if you want to call that, you have to call it
something.
But Benoit,
there are plenty of men in their 30s, 40s, 50s having a lot of sex and enjoying it.
But that's part of the whole subjectivity of it all. Like, there are people doing exactly perhaps what you had done, and you might look at them and say, that reminds me of my sex addiction, who aren't having problems at work, aren't neglecting their friends,
absolutely,
and are not miserable.
Absolutely.
And it just
is
subjective
great example
to say, whatever the activity is, it's addiction when, if it makes you miserable, it's not addiction. If it doesn't make you miserable, it just seems so arbitrary.
Let me ask you this, Benoit, and I just want to let everybody know we're talking to Dan Savage and Benoit Denizet-Lewis about sex addiction.
Yeah.
We had on the program I believe it was earlier in this week, Brad Lamb. Do you know him?
I just interviewed him about his new book.
Right. He just wrote a book called How to Change Someone You Love. He's an interventionist. He's an intervention specialist, which is a whole other really controversial thing.
Yeah.
But we were talking mostly about addiction to alcohol and drugs and the idea of having people intervene. And I was challenging him with this same sort of idea that I'll also put to you.
Mm-hmm.
If the people around you are the ones who decide that they need to intervene, well, what if they're all a bunch of Mormon straight people who just think, it's their decision that they need to intervene, that your life is out of control.
Yeah.
How do you address that? And, would you be for an intervention as well for a sex addict?
I think you're probably right. In about 5% of cases of interventions, it's the Mormons who are pissed off at their at their son who's who's gay or who for whatever reason. But you're really picking out a very small percentage. I think the most people who do an intervention are actually have noticed that their son or father or mother is in incredible pain and it seems to unable to get out of it on their own and need some help. So yes, there certainly are ways that interventions can be used because you know, you've got crazies deciding that one of their family member needs an intervention, surely, but that's not most interventions.
So, Dan, what do you say? You're a columnist, a sex columnist. People send you in a million questions. I'm sorry you've got it before. I am engaging in too much sex. I can't get enough. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. It's taking away a lot of my time. I'm addicted to it. What do I do? What do you say to them?
Immediately after you ejaculate, you rip your computer out of the wall, you throw it away. You have to sort of reconstruct and rebuild your life in a way that, where there's some imposition, really, that you put blocks when your, you know, non-reptile brain is doing the thinking, when your the top part of your brain is doing the thinking. You put impediments in the way of realizing, of, you know, losing control. No one has to have internet access in their apartments. Really, yeah. You don't. And just as, you know, nobody has to have booze in their apartment. You really don't. People act like, you know, I get letters all the time. Guys say, you know, I can't stop looking at porn, and the computer's right there in my bedroom. What do I do? Well, you can take the computer out of your freaking bedroom, for starters. But people, most of the time, when I hear from people in those situations, they don't want to take any steps to
Yeah, you're right. So, to make any changes.
You obviously recognize that person has a problem and that they need to deal with that problem. So you see a problem.
No, I agree that you can. I'm infamous among some gay men for saying you can have too much sex. You can suck too much dick. You know, we as gay men have a disadvantage sometimes. You know, it's a double-edged sword. Straight men have to sleep with women, poor things. And women aren't sluts like men are sluts. And so straight men have an external check on their own tendency towards promiscuity that we don't. We have to find an internal check on our own tendency toward promiscuity, or we'll spin out of control. And so, you know, all the time I'm telling guys that they should ramp back. Straight people need to have more sex than they do, and we gay men need to have less sex than we can. And there's a balance that can be struck. I don't think we should all be, you know, monogamous and in the suburbs with one partner and a dog and children and blah, blah, blah. That's certainly not how I live. But I forgot what the question was.
Dan, I mean, you brought up a great point, this impediment, you know, and that's the first thing. But, you know, Dan, a lot of times people are – it's a very – actually, when you're sort of – when sex has become that such an integral, obsessive part of your life as it is for some men, like taking away that computer is – really difficult, and we and I've known people who rip out that computer cord and go throw away their computer, and next week they've bought a new computer because the power sort of is that strong in them. The sort of the obsession is that strong. They don't have obsessions about gambling, drinking. They happen to have an obsession about this. You know, it's and you know I think Dan, you alluded a little bit to you know your.
I'm not against people getting help. Like people should go get a shrink. People should join a support group.
Right. Yeah.
Like I agree with you, Benoit, that this can be a huge problem in some people's lives, and people lose control and they engage in compulsive, self-destructive behaviors. My big objection, as I tried to articulate earlier, was the addiction model and applying it to something like sex,
Well, let's look at, not that it needs to be looked at again, the situation with Tiger Woods. But I say it because, Benoit, you wrote about it.
Yeah.
From what we know, and all we know are the things that some of these women have said and whatever, do you say he has a sex addiction? Because
would you say he had one if he were a gay man? You know, I look at that story. He slept with a couple of dozen women in a few years. You're like, wow, I know guys who do not have a problem, who are not sex addicts. He slept with a couple of dozen guys in a month.
Yeah, I can't tell you whether Tiger Woods is a sex addict, unfortunately. I can say that word is that I've heard that he's in treatment right now for it. Now,
of course, that's the price that is now extracted from straight guys who spin out of control sexually.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Well, I mean,
Tiger Woods is acting like is a gay man. He has the means and the opportunity to live his life like a gay guy would, because his celebrity and his fame and his money turns, you know, pulls the women toward him who are basically like gay men.
Mm-hmm. Right. is Tiger Woods a sex addict? Was Bill Clinton a sex addict? I don't know.
I don't know.
What I do know
that becomes the problem here is that it's being used right now in the media by people who want to create immorality around adultery.
Yes, and sex addiction is also, I'd say it's occasionally used like that, but for the most part, sex addiction is still not taken seriously. I mean, it really isn't. It's ridiculed, it's mocked. You look at movies or TV shows that show representations of sex addicts. They've got all the sex addicts in the 12-step room, and everyone's sort of hitting on each other. I mean, this is still not, I mean, an accepted, this is still a very controversial idea. All I know about Tiger Woods is apparently he's in treatment. He's got a no-win situation. If he comes out that he's in treatment, you know, everyone's going to say, well, he's just making an excuse, he's saving face. Apparently, from what I've heard, and I don't know this for a fact, he actually didn't want people to know he's in treatment because he doesn't want that reaction, that whole, oh, he's in treatment, he's just, you know, making excuses for his behavior. So, you know, I don't know for sure if he is. I've heard that he is in treatment. And you know what? If he decides that, you know, I actually need help, then good for him for getting help. I don't know. I mean, certainly cheating on your wife does not make you a sex addict. That is clear.
I get letters
Dan,
every
Dan, one last thought.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but no, I just get letters every day from women who force their husbands into sex addiction therapy because their husbands look at porn.
Mm-hmm.
And they want my support. And I'm like, have you been reading my column?
Right.
Because you're not going to get my support. Your husband doesn't have a problem. You do. But it now seems like this is the firing squad for straight guys who've behaved for even 5 seconds like male sexuality is something legitimate and valid and that they have a right to express. And it's really this pathologizing of male sexuality by the wider culture that does great damage to men, gay and straight, in the culture, and probably fuels in part the compulsive behaviors that you see.
That's true, and I also think that discounting sexual addiction or sexual compulsion also does great damage because there are so many people out there who have so much shame and want to find a million reasons why they're not a sex addict and don't have a problem.
Right.
So, you know, trying to balance those two things is what I'm
and
trying to do.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank both of you for coming on because both of you have thought a lot about this and I think given a lot for people to think about. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Dan Savage, sex columnist and editorial director at The Stranger in Seattle. Benoit Denizet Lewis, his new book, American Voyeur, Dispatches from the Far Reaches of Modern Life. It's coming up to 6 minutes before the hour.
The Michelangelo Senior Ellie Show.